This is Radio Influence.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Jenkins is now a free agent as he was released from his Bellator contract on Tuesday. And while the majority of MMA fans are kind of coming down on Bellator about this decision, I'm going to tell you why I actually understand why Bellator made this decision. Welcome into the MMA Report podcast right here on Radio Influence. I am Jason Floyd of the MMAReport.com. Yes, I am going to tell you exactly why I understand why Bellator decided to part ways with Bubba Jenkins. Also, I'm going to talk about the three-man booth that was used by the UFC this past Saturday night, UFC 208. I had some people ask me my thoughts about, from a broadcasting aspect, what I thought about it, so I'll give you my opinions on that. Also, I'm going to talk a little bit about Bellator and tape delay and what you can do to basically send your message to Bellator that you do not like tape-delayed Bellator shows. Also, other major topic this week is going to be the odd matchmaking made by the UFC in terms of their main event for the UFC Fight Night card in Nashville coming up in April. Along with talking about those topics, we'll get into some other news going on in MMA, including Bellator signing a 4-0 middleweight. We'll have five interviews for you here on the podcast. We're going to talk to Liam McGeary, the former Bellator light heavyweight champion. Of course, going to return to the Bellator cage next Friday night, taking on Chris Fields at Bellator 173. Also, speaking of Bellator, we'll talk to Ole Thompson. He's going to be fighting on Saturday night at Bellator 172 against Chuck Congo. Of course, first matchup since losing to Matt Mitrione last year. Also, we'll talk to Josh Apelt, the former Bellator heavyweight. He's returning to competition next Saturday night, Gladiator Challenge. He's going to be taking on Ben Beebe. Also, we'll talk to Leon Davis. He's going to be fighting his hometown next weekend, next Saturday night, Ammo Fight League. Going to be taking on Ralph Johnson. He's actually going up to 170 pounds, normally a 155er, but basically to get on this fight card and for the opponent to be, it has to be at 170, so we'll talk to him about that. Also, our final guest on this week's edition of the podcast, we're going to be joined by Cesar Sklavos. You may remember Cesar from his fight in RFA against Chico Camus. He's going to return to competition next Friday night at Front Street Fights 11 in Idaho as he's going to take on Casey Johnson. So those interviews coming up here later on in the podcast. Also, we'll get into some of the latest fight bookings that have been announced by the UFC and Bellator. But before we start talking a little bit about Bubba Jenkins, I want to let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is a go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners, live pay-per-views and TV tapings, full-length matches and interviews, movies, and documentaries. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download Fight free today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on the homepage of radioinfluence.com. And speaking of Fight TV, they will have ACB 53 on Saturday. That's a free fight card there on Saturday morning that you can watch. So be sure to check out my friends over there at Fight TV. But it was on Tuesday afternoon that I reported that Bellator had released Bubba Jenkins from his promotional agreement with the California-based promotion. And, you know, when I learned of this news on Tuesday, I'll be honest, I wasn't really shocked. And I know that, and obviously, as you know, once my story came out and then other media outlets started reporting it as well, you know, the fans, the sentiment that I saw was, man, what is Bellator doing here? But I actually understand Bellator's decision here. And I know that the way I look at this, I am the minority. I know the majority of people are going to look at this and say, why would Bellator do such a thing? Why would you get rid of, you know, one of their top 10 featherweights? And, you know, and he's a guy that adds depth to a division. So, you know, first off, let's talk a little bit. You know, Bubba Jenkins, he's been in Bellator for a long time. It's a guy that's had 11 fights inside the Bellator cage, 8 wins, three losses. He is coming off that knockout loss to Georgia Karahanyan, which this becomes a little bit of the story based on the allegations that Bubba Jenkins is making about that fight directed at Bellator MMA. We'll get into that very shortly. Now, after my story came out, and you can go to the MMAreport.com and you can see the story that I have about Bubba Jenkins being released by Bellator, and his management team, the people that run Bubba Jenkins' business, released a statement to me via Twitter where it said, quote, "Bubba asked for his release after suffering many troublesome grievances by the promotion." Now, that was the statement from Bubba Jenkins' representation about him being released from his Bellator contract. Now, speaking of Bubba Jenkins, before I kind of get into why I understand why Bellator made this decision, you know, all you have to do is go to Bubba Jenkins' timeline, which on Twitter is at Bubba Jenkins MMA. Now, this was... he put this, these series of tweets out there. First up, he says, quote, "Yes, the story is true. I have asked for my release from Bellator MMA. People treat you how you allow them to treat you. Respect for yourself is the key. I got real fans out there and real supporters that will always be with me. Not even close to the end, just another page in the book. I've seen this movie before, and I love the ending. Just wait on it. All praise to the Most High. I got dirt on my ex. Who want to know how dirty she was? People, this is not a sad day, LOL. This is a great day. I asked for my release. I'm free to entertain you however, wherever I want. They can fool some people sometimes, but they can't fool all the people all the time. Ha ha, don't get it twisted, folks. I don't get fired, I fire. Maybe I should have waited to drop some news, LOL. My phone about to die. Shout out to all the love and people bombing my phone. I see real MVPs." And this was his final tweet, and this is the one that is directed about Bellator and his fight at Bellator 160. Quote, "Bellator quick to get out and tell lies. Let's see if they can spin this. I fought August 26 and still haven't been paid all of my money. Hashtag pay me." Now, obviously, I've reached out to Bellator, and at this time, as a recording of this podcast, I've not received any comment from Bellator in terms of the allegations that are being made by Bubba Jenkins. I'll say this in terms of the allegations. If Bubba Jenkins is what he is alleging is true, any lawyer would take that case in a heartbeat. So I would say is, Bubba Jenkins, why are you not filing suit if they truly do owe you money? Also, I would say this, quote, "Bellator quick to get out and tell lies." I would love to understand, hear what exactly Bubba Jenkins has to say there and why he believes Bellator is out there telling lies. Because, what exactly is the lies that Bellator is saying? The fact that they're saying that they released you from your contract? Well, that's what happened here. You know, Bellator released Bubba Jenkins from his contract. And I would also say this. I think that for Bubba Jenkins, I don't know if I was his manager. I don't know if I'd necessarily like all these tweets out there. I think you'd probably want to handle privately. Because also I think that there will be other promoters that will see these tweets and maybe go, is Bubba Jenkins a guy that I necessarily want to be in business with? But as I said at the beginning of the show, while a majority of people don't understand why Bellator made this move, I am a minority. I completely understand why Bellator made this move. Now, let's give a little back history here in terms of Bubba Jenkins. You know, he made his pro debut back in 2011 at Tachi Palace Fights 11. Now, he went 3-0, all submission wins, and then he got signed by Bellator in 2013. This was during the previous regime of Bellator under Bjorn Rebney. And, he comes in, he gets a TKO win in his first fight, and then he gets upset by LaRue Burley, and then he ends up putting a couple wins together, ends up dropping down to featherweight. He won his first two fights at 145 pounds, And then he gets submitted against Georgia Garhanian. Then he goes out and wins three in a row. Good wins over Jordan Parson and Gochi Yamauchi. And then he got that rematch with Georgia Garhanian once again. And this time, just like the first time he lost in 1 minute and 49 seconds, this time he lost in 53 seconds. The first time it was via submission, and the second time it was via a knockout by Georgia Garhanian. And, you know, as I said, I understand that I am going to be in the minority here in that I understand why Bellator made this move. I think that you look at the amount of fights that Bubba Jenkins had in Bellator, 11. Now, yes, he did go 8-3, but every time, you know, you looked at when he took that big step up in competition, and that was against Georgia Garhanian, he could not elevate himself to that next level. There will be people that will say, you know, that will still be optimistic on the ceiling of Bubba Jenkins, but there also will be people out there that wonder if Bubba Jenkins has plateaued. And I'm not saying he's plateaued. Don't take it that way. I'm not saying that he's plateaued, but there will be some people out there that will wonder that. They'll wonder whether he is plateaued. But the other thing about Bubba Jenkins, and anyone who watches the Bellator product, and particularly under the new regime of Scott Coker and Rich Chow, you understand that they're going out there and they're looking for exciting fighters. You know, Bubba Jenkins has a wrestling base, and you know, I mean, go look at that Gochi Yamauchi fight. Anyone who watched that knows it wasn't exactly the most exciting fight because he just uses wrestling, and Gochi had no answer for the wrestling. And of course, Gochi now up at 155 pounds, and Gochi had told me, he said, "Look, I just had a bad weight cut, and ultimately, I just wasn't the weight cut took so much out of me that I just didn't have it there on fight night." So I understand, you know, that from a stylistic point that, you know, Bubba Jenkins doesn't necessarily have that fighting style that they love. Now, here's the other thing. If Bubba Jenkins was, you know, because I can tell you this, I know they do this at Bellator and Spike. They chart out every fighter in terms of television ratings. They know who are the fighters that bring eyeballs to the television set on a Friday night. They know exactly who the draws are. So to me, the fact that they were willing to, you know, grant Bubba Jenkins his release tells me they think Bubba Jenkins is not a draw. And obviously they have data to prove that. This is a guy that's had 11 fights in the promotion. Now, some of those fights were not all main card fights. They were preliminary card fights. But, you know, Bellator and Spike, they know who the draws are here. You know, and so I'll sit there. And I think the other part you have to wonder about is, you know, you hear the term gatekeeper. In MMA gets thrown around. Usually a gatekeeper is more about a former champion kind of sticking around, but really not making that run at the title. I mean, when I look at Bubba Jenkins, I see a guy that, I mean, he's clearly a top 10, 145 pound fighter in Bellator, but is he going to get into that top five? And I don't see it happening, you know, and I got this comment on the MMAreport.com, and this came from Rodney P. He said, he goes, "I think Bellator realizes Bubba Jenkins would be too dangerous of an opponent for the up-and-comers like AJ McKee and James Gallagher, and he would also be too dangerous of an opponent for the likes of Daniel Vichel and Pat Kern because he would wrestle them like crazy. Good luck to him because I think he has a bright future in MMA." Now, in terms of Bubba Jenkins' future, I mean, that's ultimately up to him. I think that if the World Series of Fighting does not come calling to Bubba Jenkins, I think Bubba Jenkins is going to have to understand that he's going to have to take a massive pay cut. You know, his last disclosed salaries at Bellator 160, he made $14,000 a show. And there is not a regional promoter that's paying $14,000. They would have to be the president of the Bubba Jenkins fan club to pay Bubba Jenkins $14,000 to fight on the regional scene. You know, probably in. Honestly, probably the best case scenario for Bubba Jenkins if he doesn't get in the World Series of Fighting. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think the World Series of Fighting would pay him $14,000. Maybe they'd give him $8,000 or $10,000 a show. But in terms of the regional scene, he's probably looking at $4,000 a show, $4,000 a win. I mean, and that's probably the high end of it. And there may be a lot of promoters that would not be willing to go that high. And I know there's some people who go, "Man, $4,000 a show, $4,000 a win. Come on, Jason. Doesn't he need more money? Shouldn't he be paid more money than that?" Well, ultimately, it's the promoter has to make money. And, you know, if you go out to these regional shows, you know the fact of there's not a ton of money being made in these regional shows. And that's why you have to go out there and you have to support these regional shows. I'm going to be going to a regional show next Friday night here in Tampa. I'm going to be at the RFC show. You know, go out there and check out some of the young talent that's here in the Tampa Bay area. Also, I know there's going to be some guys coming up from Coconut Creek at American Top Team that are going to be on that card as well. So you have to go out there and support. I mean, if you want these guys on the regional level to make more money, ultimately you got to go out there, you got to buy these tickets, and you got to support these guys. I mean, that's ultimately the way that regional pay is going to go up. And I know a lot of people rail on regional pay, but at the end of the day, it's because of, you know, these promoters. I mean, you know, there's some promoters that out there that are making a good money, but a lot of them are probably just trying to break even more than anything else. You know, in terms of what Rodney had to say there, saying that you know, that he thinks that Bellator realized that Jenkins would be too dangerous an opponent for up-and-comers like AJ McKee and James Gallagher. I mean, look, you know, McKee and Jenkins actually trained with each other at one time when Jenkins was at Team Body Shop. Now, Jenkins has gone around to multiple camps. When he came in the Bellator, he was doing some training at American Top Team down in Coconut Creek, Florida. Then he ended up going out to California. He was there with Tiki Golston in Huntington Beach. And then he ends up, remember he went to Antonio McKee's gym, Team Body Shop. Then I'd heard he was at Team Alliance. And then I've heard he may not necessarily be at Alliance anymore. So a lot of gyms that Butch Jenkins has been to over the past couple of years, which kind of makes you wonder why. Is it just something that he just wants different looks, or is there another reason why maybe, you know, he's going gym to gym? The other thing that to point out about Bubba Jenkins, and this is just MMA fighters in general, you know, I can't sit here and firmly say what the relationship was like between Bubba Jenkins, Scott Coker, and Rich Chow. I mean, the only ones that can answer that question would be those three guys. But I could see if maybe Bubba wasn't the easiest to deal with, that maybe that was maybe part of Bellator's decision. They said, you know what, you know, we have a tough relationship with this guy, so we don't want to go that way. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just throwing it out there of things I've heard in the past in terms of promoter and fighter relations, that sometimes, you know, a promoter might say, you know what, I just don't want to deal with this fighter because they're a pain in the butt to deal with. I'm not saying that's with Bubba, but I'm saying that could be another reason why maybe Bellator wanted to part ways with him. And like I said, I know I'm in the minority. I know that a lot of people out there are sitting there going, how can you release Bubba Jenkins? But to me, I have no problem with this move. I think, you know, in the other part of it, I think where you look at from Bellator, from the financial aspect of, you know, look, the last disclosed pay was $14,000 a show. If I'm Bellator, you know what you have in Bubba Jenkins at this point. I mean, when he came in, he was a promising prospect, a guy that, you know, when Bjorn Rebney and Sam Kaplan brought him in, this is a guy that they thought they could, you know, develop and eventually be a guy that could be competing for the Bellator at that time, lightweight title, now the featherweight title. But, you know, they know what they have at this point. So, you know, I don't think Bubba Jenkins was going to make a run at the 145-pound title. I don't think he would beat any of those guys in the top five. You know, obviously he's got great wrestling, but, you know, when you're talking about, you know, fighting the Currens, the Emmanuel Sanchez's, the Georgie Garahanians, the Daniel Vichels, the Daniel Strauss, the Patricio Pitbulls, you got to have an entire, you know, you have to be well-rounded. And yes, Bubba has a great wrestling game, but, you know, he's got to round that game out if he was going to beat those top five guys. And personally, I just did not see that happen. But on the financial aspect, if I'm Bellator, I'm Scott Coker, I'm Rich Chow, I'm Mike Kogan, or anyone involved in talent relations in Bellator, and I'm looking at, you know, where do you want to spend your money? Where do you want to put your assets into it? And if I'm them, I'd rather right now at where they're at is use that money to look, you know, how do we develop James Gallagher into a bigger star? How do we, you know, get AJ McKee into a bigger star? Or maybe it's going out there and spending some money to go out there and get some prospects. You know, we're going to talk about the fact of, you know, Bellator signed a middleweight this week, you know, a guy that's going to make his debut at Bellator 173 that I'm very interested to see how he's able to do there coming over from Legacy Fights. But, you know, I think that, you know, you Rodney mentioned about AJ McKee and James Gallagher. You know, if Bubba Jenkins fought AJ McKee, that would be an interesting stylistic matchup. I think that AJ would probably be able to keep the fight on the feet, and I think that ultimately he would probably win a 3-round decision. But you know, look, those two guys train together, so who knows what actually happened in the training room. At right now, if Bubba Jenkins and James Gallagher fought, yes, I would pick Bubba Jenkins. I think that. And I'm guilty of this when it comes to James Gallagher, where we had put him, I don't know if pedestal is the right word or not, but you know, the fight against Anthony Taylor, I think, was a wake-up call for a lot of people who, like myself and other people in the media, that follow Bellator closely and are always looking for, you know, who is that next prospect in Bellator. I think that, you know, we had James Gallagher a little fast-tracked, and that Anthony Taylor fight, I think, was a little bit of a wake-up call. Of course, you know, he does have a fight coming up here, and I think that what you're going to see is Bellator really do a slow build. I think that, you know, Rich Chow, he saw that matchup against Anthony Taylor, and I think he sat there and realized that, hey, you know, we got to kind of slow things down here a little bit on James Gallagher. You know, maybe he's not quite ready for the type of competition that we thought he was ready for at this point. I mean, the fight against Anthony Taylor, I think, was really, and I talked about it, that was a fight heading into it that was a showcase fight for James Gallagher, and really it did not end up being a showcase fight. So, you know, I think that, you know, yes, I would pick Bubba Jenkins over James Gallagher right now, but another year or two, I don't know if I would necessarily. We're going to see what happens there with James Gallagher. I think that ultimately is that, you know, Bellator made a business decision here, and they decided, and I have no problems with that. But look, do I understand people out there saying, I mean, come on, how can you release a guy who's 8-3 in promotion? Yes, I understand that. But also, I think there's a little bit more to the story. You know, Bubba Jenkins can say he asked for his release, but at the end of the day, Bellator had to grant that release. Bellator could have easily held him to that contract, forced him to take that fight, you know, sit there and offer him a fight, and he'd have to take it or he's going to sit on the sidelines. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Bubba Jenkins. But, you know, really, at the end of the day, I understand why Bellator made this decision. I think at this point, you know what you have in Bubba Jenkins. And I think that, as I said, I'm telling you, Bellator and Spike, they track TV ratings when it comes to all these fighters. So they know who the draws are. And yes, Bubba Jenkins is a very popular fighter on social media. But if he was a very popular fighter on Spike TV, he's probably still in Bellator. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, there's always, you know, it's like they say, there's three sides of the story. There's going to be Bellator's side of the story. There's going to be Bubba Jenkins' side of the story. Each of them probably has some truth in it, and then the truth is ultimately in the middle. So we'll see what happens there with Bubba Jenkins and what ends up being next for him. And if the World Series of Fighting, you know, is not interested in Bubba Jenkins' services, obviously the UFC is not going to be interested in Bubba Jenkins' service at this point. He's going to have to go in the regional scene, and you know, it could be an ego check a little bit for Bubba Jenkins in terms of pay, because as I said, you know, on the regional scene, probably the max that Bubba Jenkins would see is $4,000, and ultimately that would probably either be him fighting in Virginia where he's from, or fighting in Arizona, where of course he went to Arizona State. So we'll see what happens there with Bubba Jenkins. Now, I did have some people since Saturday ask me about UFC 208 in terms of the three-man booth. And of course, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you know that I've been in broadcasting since 2002. I have been in play-by-play broadcasting essentially all of my radio career, you know, in terms of, you know, working for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as one behind the scenes guys, you know, in terms of the radio broadcast. And also, I have been a part of a three-man booth on air as a play-by-play and color commentator, and also as a behind-the-scene guy producer for a college bowl game that I did for a couple years, you know, while I was at Clear Channel Communications, which is now iHeart. And, you know, three-man booths, it's I wrote this on social media when I responded to a couple people. I'm not a huge fan of three-man booths, and the reason is it's just because of my experience in them. I think they're very tough. I can tell you, in terms of, you know, my first start into play-by-play broadcasting was doing high school football games on the radio. And, you know, it was a three-man booth. It was myself and two other people on the broadcast. And I will tell you, it took us some time to kind of, you know, figure out how we all kind of wanted to blend together. And I will tell you, it took us probably a full season to actually kind of get it down. And we did it for about 4 or 5 years. And years 2 through 3 and 4, I mean, we had great broadcasts, but it took us some time. And I think that, and I saw a lot of people being critical of the broadcast, and I actually thought it was a really good broadcast. And I know, like, probably just like the Bubba Jenkins situation, I might be in the minority on this thought process. But I thought it was a good broadcast. I thought, to me, it seemed like that John Anik, whether it was his decision or someone in production, kind of made it known that, hey, we're going to, kind of let this be about Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier, which I don't think is a bad decision. I can tell you that, I'm going to have the opportunity to call some, play by play here in MMA here in the future, on a local level. And, way I look at it is I'm going to basically what I call throw softballs up to my color analyst and let the color analyst hit it out of the ballpark, because ultimately someone listening to that broadcast, they really want to hear the color analyst. They definitely don't want to hear the play by play. It's, and calling MMA is different than, calling a football game. Obviously a football game, you want to hear, you're going to hear the play by play guy more than you're going to hear the color analyst. But I thought they did a good job. And, one of the things that you typically have in a three-man booth is people talking over each other. You really didn't have that. But one of the things about the three-man booth, and I really hope that the UFC, they ultimately stick to the same three people. And it's obviously, Cormier's now full on in his training camp for Anthony Johnson at UFC 210. He's not doing UFC 209. It appears that it's actually going to be Dominic Cruz that is going to be, the third man in the booth there with John Anik and Joe Rogan. And so I think that you just hope that, for Anik, I mean, John Anik, one of the things that amazes me about him and just how good he is, I mean, you just think about all the different broadcast partners he has on those UFC broadcasts, whether it's Brian Stann, whether it's Kenny Florian, Daniel Cormier, Dominic Cruz. I mean, he's had multiple, and he goes out there and just puts on great products. To me personally, I think Brian Stann and John Anik is the best team that the UFC does have out there. But, I think that overall they did a pretty good job at UFC 208. And if you didn't hear, I would recommend go and listen to John Anik's interview he did on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, where he just talked about the fact of how everything went down. And for me, just as someone in the broadcasting field, I actually thought it was a really good broadcast of the three of those guys together. And it was interesting to kind of hear that dynamic between Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier. It'll be very interesting to hear the dynamic between Joe Rogan and Dominic Cruz at UFC 209. By the way, speaking of the UFC, and we're going to talk a lot about the fight bookings that have been made here shortly, but I wanted to mention about this an odd fight booking that got announced on Saturday night. And when this got announced during the preliminary card on FS1, I was baffled. You always talk about, head scratching fight bookings, and you're going to talk about that with Liam McGarry here later on in this podcast, talking about his matchup against Chris Fields, because that was a matchup when it got announced, everyone was kind of head scratching. And when the UFC announced on Saturday night that the main event of UFC Fight Night Nashville on April 22nd is going to be Cub Swanson versus Artem Lobov, I was like, huh? Like, look, first off, from a rankings aspect, this fight makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. Now, Artem has won back-to-back fights, and I know Artem has been looking for a fight where, he's going to fight a guy that's going to sit there and have a striking matchup with him, not taking on a guy that's going to look at taking to the ground. But then, I started thinking about this matchup, and I go, I mean, for Cub Swanson, this does nothing. All this is a payday for Cub Swanson. It does absolutely nothing for Cub Swanson in terms of him going up, the ladder there in the UFC featherweight division. And I just I was joking with somebody via a text message, someone in the industry. And I said, what is this, just Artem Lobov headlining a UFC fight card in the United States? If this was overseas, okay, and it was like a Fight Pass card, all right, I could kind of get on board with that. If it was someone, 15 to 20 to 25 in the UFC featherweight rankings. But with the Cub Swanson, I think Cub's number 4 or number 5 currently in those rankings. It makes no sense. And I just joked with this person. I said, so does this mean Conor McGregor's now a UFC matchmaker that he's hooking up his buddy with a main event slot? I mean, this is just it's such a head scratcher. And we see some of these fight bookings. And look, and for the most part, the UFC puts together great fight bookings. But this is one of those matchups that you're just like, huh? Just such an odd matchup there in a fight. And I know Cub Swanson has come out and said that, you know, hey, this is the fight they offered me. I said, okay. But as a main event, I just don't know about that one. The other major topic I want to touch on this week is Bellator and tape delay broadcast. Now, next Friday night, Bellator 173 will be a tape delay broadcast. It is, it's an overseas show. And, you know, from when it's a Friday show, from Spike's aspect, I understand why they tape delay a Friday show. Now, if it's a Saturday show, I don't understand why you would tape delay a Saturday show. Put it on in the afternoon. If you want to air it at night as well, and some people want to go out there. And I do know that as combat sports fans, it's basically in our brains that, you know, fights are always at night. They're not in the afternoons. But, you know, when it's overseas shows, it could be in afternoon shows. And I tweeted this the other day, and, you know, and it's simple. If you don't like the tape delay shows, there's one way you can send that message to the people at Bellator and to the people at Spike. And that is simply just don't watch the events. If you don't watch the events, all of a sudden, they won't tape delay these shows anymore. I mean, they're going to be tape delaying the show with Eduardo Dantas and Darian Caldwell, Bellator 177. Hopefully, broadcast details weren't announced for Bellator 179 for the United States in terms of Paul Daly and Rory McDonald. I mean, I would sure as hell hope that fight's not tape delay here in the United States. I mean, it's one of the best fight cards that Bellator main events. I mean, let's be honest about it. If you're living in London, and you can only go to one show, it's a UFC show or the Bellator show, you got to be going to the Bellator show. I mean, it's Paul Daly and Rory McDonald. That's one of the best welterweight fights that can be made in all of MMA at this point. You know, in terms of the UFC main event, which is Jimmy Manuwa and Corey Anderson. To me, if I lived in London and I could only afford to go to one of these shows, I'm going to the Bellator show. And it's all just because of Paul Daly and Roy McDonald, of course, that was announced last week. In terms of some of the other fight bookings that have been announced over the last week or so, we'll go through, we'll mention about Bellator first. Bellator 174, Justin Rinn is going to be returning to the Bellator cage on that night. This is the event on March 3rd in Thackerville, Oklahoma. He is going to be taking on Roman Palazzo, also Alexis Dufresne, Gabriel Holloway, Emily Ducote versus Katie Collins, Brandon Gers versus Fernando Gonzalez, and Steve Garcia versus Joe Taimingo have all been added to that fight card. Now, the Brandon Gers is replacing Andre Koreshkov. Koreshkov broke his leg, so Fernando Gonzalez now taking on Brandon Gers. Brandon Gers moving up to 170, and all signs point to that this is just an opportunity for Brandon Gers, that he does not have any intentions of moving up to 170 long-term, but just taking the opportunity here. And I mentioned Bellator 179, Paul Daly, Roy McDonald. Bellator 177, Eduardo Dantas defending the bantamweight title against Darian Caldwell. Now, when it comes to the UFC, first off, UFC Fight Night London, the co-main event was announced on Tuesday, Gunnar Nelson versus Alan Joabuena. The main event of UFC 212, which is going to be June 3rd, in Brazil, will be a unification title matchup in the featherweight division, Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway. UFC 209, which is next month, got a great 1-2 punch there with the welterweight title and interim lightweight title. Also adds to that fight card, Darren Elkins versus Mirsad Bektik, Luke Sanders versus Yuri Alcantara, and Tyson Pedro versus Paul Craig. The Pedro-Craig matchup will be the featured prelim on UFC Fight Pass. UFC Fight Night Fortaleza, this is going to be on March 11th. Hani Yaya versus Joe Soto. Godfredo Pepe versus Kyle Bochniak have been added to that fight card. UFC 210, this will be the pay-per-view in April in Buffalo. Shane Burgos versus Charles Rosa. Really like that matchup. Will Brooks takes on Charles Oliveira. So Charles Oliveira, after being unable to make 145 pounds, he moves up back to 155 pounds. Big matchup there for Will Brooks. Brooks also was hoping for maybe a matchup against Anthony Pettis, but Oliveira took the fight. According to Will Brooks, that the fight was offered to Pettis and Oliveira at the same time, and Oliveira's a guy who took the fight first. Also adds that fight card, Kamaru Usman versus Sean Strickland. Usman, a guy that really, really was really blown away with his performance in his last fight there. And so we'll see how well he does there against Sean Strickland. Does he use his wrestling, or is it like his last fight? We see more of the striking aspect from him. UFC on Fox in Kansas City in April. A couple matchups have been officially announced for this fight card. Rose Namajunas versus Michelle Waterson. Tim Elliott versus Louis Smolka. Devin Clark versus Jake Collier. And Anthony Smith versus Andrew Sanchez. Now, on Saturday night, this event's going to be held at the Sprint Center. And the Sprint Center Twitter account listed a bantamweight matchup between Do Ho Choi and Hinnan Burrell. Now, that was not announced by the UFC, and that tweet was ultimately taken down. So maybe that's a fight that they're looking to have on that card, but interesting matchup there if that fight does take place. I mentioned about Swanson and Lobov headlining the fight night card in Nashville. Also adds to that fight card, Hector Sandoval versus Matt Schnell. Dustin Ortiz versus Brandon Moreno, Talis Lites versus Sam Alvey, Jessica Penne versus Danielle Taylor, Al Iaquinta returning to the UFC to take on Diego Sanchez, and Scott Holtzman versus Michael McBride. So a nice little start there to that national card, even though the main event, as I said, just a complete head scratcher there. So those are some of the latest fight bookings that have been announced by the UFC and Bellator. By the way, speaking of MMA events, this week, a lot of MMA events taking place. On Thursday night, you have Combate Americas on Fight Pass. On Friday, you have LFA 4 on Access TV. On Saturday, at Bellator 172 on Spike, ACB 53 on Fight TV, and CFFC 63 on GFL TV. And then, of course, on Sunday, you have UFC Fight Night Lewis versus Brown on FS1. Should be noted that that will be the UFC play-by-play debut of Todd Grisham. He will be joined by Brian Stan, and your studio analysts are going to be Dominic Cruz and Gilbert Melendez. And speaking of that Bellator and UFC card, I will have a preview podcast that's going to come out on Friday morning, as myself and Daniel Galvan are going to break down those two fight cards. Obviously the return of Fedor here to the United States, that is something to, it's going to be worth noting. I've said it several times. I think that Matt Mitrione is going to starch him. I think that it's going to be a very impressive win by Matt Mitrione. Co-main event that fight card, Patricio Pitbull and Josh Thompson, a lot on the line there, particularly for Josh Thompson. And if Patricio Pitbull wins that fight, I really don't know what they're going to do with Michael Chandler, the Bellator lightweight champion. Of course, over at the UFC card, Derek Lewis, Travis Brown, big matchup for both of those guys. Be interesting to see what happens with Travis Brown. Still has Edmund Tavernius going to be in his corner, but he's been in Vegas and still working with Edmund, but in Vegas more about getting those bodies. So we'll see how he does. And of course, Derek Lewis, big matchup for him on that fight card. Also, you got Johnny Hendricks moving up to 185 to take on Hector Lombard. Johnny Hendricks this week saying that the reason he had to move up to 185 was because of the IV band. So we'll have a preview podcast coming up on Friday, so be on the lookout for that. But before we get into the interviews, which first up you will hear from Liam McGarry, I want to get you some of the latest news and notes going on in MMA. I mentioned about a undefeated middleweight signing with Bellator and Jiu-Jitsu. That is Jiu-Jitsu champion Rafael Lovato. He has signed with Bellator, going to make his promotional debut, Bellator 174. He's going to take on Wyman Carter. A nice signing here by Bellator. 185 is one of those divisions that they need to. They've got to make that division deeper. I mean, you've seen all the issues. And earlier this week, I had a comment on the MMAReport.com from Hardcore MMA Fan, where he was, asked me about Lorenz Larkin, and he wrote this. He says he's at welterweight right now, but he could fight Bellator's middleweight division. The middleweight division is one of their worst. Bantamweight, middleweight, and heavyweight are their worst divisions. They really need to improve those ASAP. And what I wrote to Arkham MMA Fan is I totally agree. They have to improve those divisions, but if I'm Lorenz Larkin, I'm Lorenz Larkin's management, and ultimately he ends up in Bellator, I want to be at welterweight because that's where the money fights are. At the end of the day, this is about making money. So, but a really nice signing there by Bellator. So we'll see how well Lovato is able to do in Bellator MMA. Also, Dana White this past weekend at UFC 208 said that Misha Cirkunov is done in the UFC, saying, quote, Misha was really flaking out on the deal. Dana proclaiming that sounds like they have a verbal agreement. And, you know, kind of an odd situation there with Mecha Sirkunov. Obviously, a guy you would think that the UFC would have won in there. If you're Bellator, I think you should swoop in and try to get Mecha Sirkunov right now. But I think maybe if you're Bellator, you got to kind of wonder, you know, why that deal with the UFC not come down. James Mousari has announced his retirement. He did that on Facebook. The referees are set for the title fights at UFC 209. John McCarthy will be the referee in the main event between Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson, and Herb Dean will be the referee for Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Speaking of referees, of course, that was a big topic of all UFC 208. And I saw this tweet from Bryn Schaub after UFC 208 where he said this, quote, "If I was a champion or contender, I would not fight in New York. They clearly are not ready for this level of mixed martial arts." Now, and I've seen this sentiment kind of thrown out there about the New York State Athletic Commission. And, you know, one of the things when I got the official assignment sheet on Saturday night for UFC 209, you know, I will tell you, I was pretty surprised to see Todd Anderson as a referee of the main event, especially with Dan Mergliotta working that show. I would have thought that Dan would have gotten the opportunity there in the main event. But I can tell you this, Todd Anderson is a well-respected referee in the Northeast. You know, he works a lot of Northeast shows. He works in the Midwest as well. Along with being a referee, he's also a judge. I think that, you know, clearly he has to take fault in what happened there in the main event, and clearly should have taken a point there. You know, but you know, one of the things in terms of the judges, it was pretty much all the judges that normally score UFC events. The only two judges that were working that event that normally or hardly ever work UFC events, that would have been Eric Colon and Douglas Crosby. Outside of that, it was Sal D'Amato, works nearly all the UFC events. Jeff Mullen, Chris Lee, Derek Clearly. You know, these guys are always judging UFC events. So it was one of those things that I think it was a hot take for a lot of people. But in terms of the judges, a lot of those judges work, you know, UFC events all across the United States and all across the world. By the way, speaking of, you know, notable topics in the UFC, on Tuesday, the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather stuff got heated up again. There was an article in The Sun over there in the UK about this. And then, of course, there was thoughts about that, you know, hey, this was almost a done deal and that Mayweather McGregor was closer than people thought. And then Floyd Mayweather ended up putting this message out on social media saying, quote, "Although there has been several rumors circulating through media suggesting that I will have an upcoming fight, I'd like to set the record straight and state there has been no deals made on my behalf in regards to a bout with any fighter at this time. I am happily retired and enjoying my life. Rest assured that if anything changes, any changes come about, I will be the first to let the world know." Now, that was Floyd Mayweather on social media on Tuesday. Conor McGregor is in Las Vegas. He is getting a rehearing with the Nevada Athletic Commission in terms of his disciplinary case. And, of course, now look, if this fight ever does happen, and, you know, as I said a couple weeks ago, there's a lot of hurdles to get through. You know, one of those hurdles, first off, is Conor's got to, you know, have this rehearing with the Nevada Athletic Commission. We'll see how that hearing goes. You know, I don't think there's going to be a major issue in terms of getting Conor McGregor a boxing license in the state of Nevada. You know, I guess, I mean, look, this fight makes a lot of sense for all parties involved, whether we're talking about Mayweather or we're talking about McGregor or we're talking about the UFC. And you look at, you know, the amount of debt that the UFC owners have. I think this is a fight that under the old UFC ownership, I think they would immediately say, no way, we're not doing this. But because of what is going on in the UFC, I think that they're open for this happening. But look, there's still a lot of hurdles to go. It's at this point, it's a story that you're like, okay, when the deal gets done, just let me know it's done. Let me know the date and let me know when I need to book my flight to Las Vegas. But, you know, that is the saga of Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather continues to happen. Three other notes to mention here before we bring in Liam McGarry. Luke Rockhold, the former UFC middleweight champion, he is targeting a July return, and he wants to fight Jacare Souza. Brock Lesnar has informed the UFC he's retiring from MMA, and it's no longer in the USADA testing pool. I am probably like a lot of people that doesn't necessarily believe Brock Lesnar is ultimately going to retire because money talks, and I could ultimately see Brock Lesnar having an MMA fight at some point down the line. And final thing, there was a report out of Poland on Monday that Joanna Jędrzejczyk was going to defend the UFC women's strawweight title at UFC 211 in Dallas in May against Jessica Andrade. Joanna Jędrzejczyk came out and said, nope, not fighting in Dallas. Obviously, Jessica Andrade is a fight that is going to happen, but that fight is not booked at this time. So we'll see when that happens. You know, UFC 211, that's when Yoel Romero wants to fight Michael Bisping. It seems to be the route that everything's going to go. It doesn't sound like Bisping's going to campaign for, say, an Anderson Silva rematch. So, you know, it's a fight that I think if that fight does end up happening, Yoel Romero will be the UFC middleweight champion. I don't see Michael Bisping winning that fight. I think it'll be you know, a devastating victory there by Yoel Romero. So we'll see what happens there. But right now we are going to get into the interview portion of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. And first up, I'm going to let you hear from Liam McGarry, the former Bellator light heavyweight champion. I had a chance to catch up with Liam, talk to him about everything that has been going on with him. Also talk to him about Chris Fields. Was it a head scratcher for him, like was for a lot of people when this fight got booked? And we talked about kind of what he is mapping out for 2017. Joining us now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man, it's going to be the main event of Bellator 173 coming up on February 24th in Ireland. It is Liam McGarry. Liam, I appreciate the time. How's it going, man?
It's going very well. Bit cold, but it's not too bad.
I appreciate the time, as always. You know, I think that the narrative heading into your fight with Phil Davis, it seemed to be that a lot of people were really questioning you about your knee, how it was, whatnot. Was there ever a point in that where you were just like, guys, stop asking me this question?
Yeah, but I mean, this is MMA. These are fans. These are people who question. The question was always going to keep coming and going round and round and round. So it was something that I had to deal with, and I dealt with it. But
and obviously that was your first fight in a long time, and you know the question always comes up about cage rust. Some guys will say it's true, some guys will say it's mental. You know, Dominic Cruz has really talked about that. It's more of a mental thing for you. Where do you stand on that? Do you think there's a little bit to that?
You know what? I was one of those ones to be like, "Oh, ring rust doesn't affect me." Da 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 da. Blah blah blah. Right, but I got in that cage and I realized, shit, it really does, you know. It affected me, you know. I've seen Dominic Cruz is one of the ones, he came back from injury, won his title back. The Korean Zombie just came back and destroyed your man with that wicked uppercut, you know. So some people it doesn't affect, but some people it does. I'm 11 fights into my career, you know. When I first started, I'd have a fight, then I'd wait like 9 or 10 months and have another fight, then I'd wait another 9 or 10 months and have another fight. But it never affected me then. But the level I was fighting at was not this level. You know, this level that I'm fighting at, I want to keep busy. I don't want to have layoffs. You know, I'm fighting the top dudes in the world. So now it's like for me personally, I like to keep active, and I get better when I have a fight. I get better at the next one, and then I get the next one, and the next one, and the next one.
The momentum,
that's a word.
I was listening to another interview you did recently, and you were talking about the amount of training you had for that Phil Davis fight, where you're talking about there were times where you're doing four times a day. Is maybe one of the lessons that you learned for preparations from that fight in terms of preparations for this fight is that you don't have to necessarily do those 4 days. You can kind of tone back the training and maybe have not as many sessions, but you know the intensity is much more.
Yeah, you know, it's all about training smarter, especially at our age now. You know, we're getting on a bit, so it's about like smart training. And it's about what the training you're actually doing. You know, so yeah, I mean, I was got to do this, and it's like I got by the time Saturday came and I'd done another two or three sessions on a Saturday, and it was oh my god, and then it's Sunday is not long enough for you, and then Monday comes around and it's all go again, and I was tired, man. I was tired. I'd go into training sessions and be like, Jesus, you look tired. I'm like, I feel it. The body doesn't work as well as what you want it to do. It doesn't, you know, I need my body to perform at the highest possible level. And if I'm throwing everything into my training camp and not leaving anything for the fight, then that's silly on my behalf, you know?
And, of course, now you got this fight here against Chris Fields. When this fight was announced, I think I probably had a reaction that a lot of people had. It was kind of – it was a head-scratcher. You looked at – obviously, you're the former champion. Chris, he's 2-4-1 in his last 7 fights. Was this a head-scratcher when you got offered this fight?
A little bit yes and no, you know. I mean, I thought I even knew the guy, you know, and I'm like, that was my head scratcher, but it turns out he was on the Ultimate Fighter. So, I mean, I got asked to fight in Belfast. I'm looking forward to fighting over in Belfast. I've never been to Ireland. I get this fight in front of my home crowd, so they say. And I mean, to me, a fight is a fight, you know. It's still going to be a dangerous, it's an MMA fight, so it's going to be as dangerous as an MMA fight can be.
Obviously, heading over there, your first two fights took place in the UK, but since then, everything's been in the United States. What do you remember about those first two fights in fighting in the UK?
So I was very green when I fought in the UK. You know, I was training very well. My team back in England is a great team. You know, they produced a lot of jiu-jitsu fighters, but I was missing some stuff, you know, and the only thing that I could do was I came over here to gain those extra missing pieces.
And of course, obviously training up there in New York, will you go over to Ireland a couple of days before maybe you normally would head over to a fight just to get adjusted to the time difference?
Yeah. We'll go a week before and just get adjusted I mean, the time zone is not that bad when you're leaving here to go to England. It's when you come back, that's when it really kicks in.
In terms of your where you stand right now in the light heavyweight division, Bellator, it has become one of the premier divisions out there with the names that are in this division. Do you feel that a win puts you right back in line for that title shot?
Not over Chris, no. You know, this is... I'd like to fight a contender who has been up in the top and making a name, you know. So that's where I'll need to fight next. But at first, I've got Chris Fields to contend with and deal with first, and then after that, we'll see who's on the list.
I mean, obviously, you're not looking past Chris. You know, in terms of Chris's abilities, what do you think he does the best?
He does a lot of things, you know, and he does a lot of things well. So I just got to be careful of anything, you know. I need to be careful of his striking. I need to be careful of his rangy jiu-jitsu. You know, me being a long jiu-jitsu fighter myself, so I know how difficult it can be fighting a longer person. So I have to be careful, you know. It's just, if this is a fight, anything can happen in a fight game. So I've got to be prepared. And that's what my team is doing. My team is preparing me and getting me ready.
Who's going to be in your corner for this fight?
I've got Jason Strout. He's my mate. He'll be there. Mike Jaramillo and Doug. Doug's coming over.
And, you know, you are a fighter
I can't pronounce your surname.
You know, 2 of your last 3 fights have gone distance, but prior to that, pretty much everything has been in the first round. As you go back and you look at your career, is there ever a part of you that wishes that maybe you would have gotten some more cage time in to this point instead of having those such quick finishes?
I've always been a firm believer a fight needs to go on as long as it needs to go on. You know, it's if the fight ends in the first round, it's ended in the first round for a reason. You know, the title fight needed to go 25 minutes. You know, that fight with Phil Davies needed to go 25 minutes. So, It would have been nice to get a bit more case time in, but I mean, what am I going to do? I can't pick them back up and try and knock them out again, can I?
And I mean, we talk about you're not looking ahead, but as you map out of what you want 2017 to be, this is the first fight. Is your second targeted fight May 14th in London?
Damn right it is. I've never missed out on the last one. I don't know. Is it May 14th or May 19th? I don't know. I think it's May 19th.
14th or 19th, they just announced that it's going to be Rory and Daly in the main event. But I got to imagine
I just saw that.
You mentioned the fact of, hey, you missed out the first time because of your injury. Is that pretty much in a perfect world that would be your next fight?
Yes, that's what I want next. I will do this one, and then I'll jump straight back into training camp and get ready for London. I'll be knocking on people's doors and ringing people's phones up. My manager will be bugging everyone, I'm sure, get me on that card.
Just as a fight fan, are you a little disappointed that Paul and Michael's not going to take place at that event?
These two are my friends, and the same when Paul fought Brennan, it was like I've got two friends fighting each other. So as a fight fan, I look past things because I know I'm on a personal level, mm-hmm. But these guys, I knew it was going to be a day where they're going to be fighting. It's Rory and Paul is definitely going to be a great fight, it's a great fight for anyone to take. That fight will happen. They've been doing enough shit talking about it. I think MVP's been winding them up somewhat rotten, so I'm sure that's gonna take place somewhere along the line.
MVP's got a very unique striking stance and how he throws strikes. Have you ever tried to break down his game and maybe try to see how you could maybe put some of his techniques into your own game?
No, I mean he's got a karate the sport karate background. He knows distance. He understands when he can strike and when he can't strike. So that's his game. I wouldn't try and emulate anything. He does his thing and I do mine.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see Liam fight here in the main event of Bellator 173. It's going to take place on Friday, February 24th here in the United States. You can watch it on Spike at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Liam, as always, I appreciate time and good luck here.
Thanks very much, mate. Take it easy, buddy.
And that was my conversation with Liam McGarry, the former Bellator light heavyweight champion, of course, returning to the Bellator cage next Friday as he's going to take on Chris Fields. As I said earlier, head scratcher of a fight booking there by Bellator. But it'd be interesting to see what happens. Does Liam get on that London card? Obviously, you heard me ask him about that there, so we'll see what happens there with the former Bellator light heavyweight champion. Of course, Bellator does have an event coming up this weekend on Saturday night in San Jose, Bellator 172, and one of the matchups that you're going to see on the main card is a heavyweight matchup as our next guest, Ollie Thompson, is going to be on that fight card. He's going to be taking on Czech Congo. And, Thompson coming off that loss against Matt Mitrione, now taking on Czech Congo. Of course, Czech has put together a couple of wins here, but, of course, they've all come by decision. So we'll see what happens here. But I had a chance to catch up with Ollie Thompson and talk to him about his matchup on Saturday night against Czech Congo. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man, it's going to return to Bellator coming up on Saturday night, February 18th. Bellator 172 as he takes on Czech Congo. It's Ollie Thompson. And, of course, coming off that loss to Matt Mitrione in his Bellator debut. I appreciate you taking some time out of your training schedule to talk to me. Third fight in the U.S. for you. What do you remember about your previous two fights in the United States?
Obviously my first one was also in California in, UFC on Fox 2 versus DeFries. I remember the whole camp, to be honest, though. It was probably, out of all my fights, probably the biggest sort of lesson and problematic camp I ever had. And the fight showed I didn't have any answers to any questions. I didn't have any idea of what I was supposed to be doing out there. So all in all, a disaster. Not in result, but just in mentality and everything I did was I was a bit lost due to other circumstances around my camp, etc. So definitely looking forward to getting back to California and redeeming myself and showing what I'm really about.
If you ever had a camp where just everything wasn't coming together, would there ever be a part of you that would think about maybe I shouldn't fight?
Yeah, you know what. It's funny you say that exact fight is my mind was telling me, everything, all my instincts were telling me that I should not say to do this fight. I should not do this fight. But, there's certain pressures sometimes from some people in this game that make you concerned about making them types of decisions. And I did what I thought I needed to do at the time, and I lived with the regret of that, I guess.
They always talk about, you know, lessons you learn in fights. When you think about your fight against Matt last year, what are some of your biggest takeaways from that fight?
You know, I really enjoyed it. I took the fight on very, very short time notice. And I've been out for a while. I had about 2 weeks of full training for the fight. So obviously I was never going to get in amazing conditioning shape to fight the way I like to fight. And Matt had been coming off a full camp, so I knew he was going to be certainly have the edge in terms of conditioning. I felt like I had an edge in the other departments, but if you haven't got the edge in the conditioning, it's a big difference. Then unless you get the fight done and get the guy out of there, you're gonna have a hard time getting the win at the end of it, especially a guy who's durable and takes punishment as well as Matt does.
Were you surprised in that fight with some of the shots that you landed that they didn't stagger him?
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. Matt's a tough dude. I was more disappointed because I was well aware that I knew I could box with Matt no problem at all, and I did that. But my ability to sort of scrap it out when I was tired was very minimal, just because of the like I said, the conditioning wasn't where it needed to be. And I think once Matt had realised that it was clear that I was going to tire fast, he rather than box it out with me where I was landing, he decided that he was going to try and clinch, because you know, the last place you want to be when you're tired is in a clinch.
You know, and your opponent here, Chuck Congo, I think a lot of people look at Chuck, and this might be a fight that he tries to get you up against the fence and have a fight that primarily plays out in the clinch. Is that the way you view of what you believe Chuck's game plan is going to be?
Yeah, I mean, Chuck doesn't really, I haven't seen him really spring any surprises on anybody. So, yeah, it's things he likes to do. He likes to sort of weigh you down, slow the fight down to his pace, weigh you down against the wall with some knees to fire, look for his big long arms to try and get a double leg on the wall if you're being a bit lazy there. You know, yeah, like I say, he's not going to spring any surprises. So it's my job to try and make the fight go in the areas that I want it to go to.
I think a lot of fans will maybe say that, you know, Chuck's past couple fights haven't exactly been the most exciting fights to watch. How do you make sure that you don't get yourself in that kind of fight?
Well, you know, if you first things first, if you look at the guys he's fought and how the fights have gone, then you can see that it's not as easy as you'd like it to be to stop that happening. He's good at what he does. Clearly, because his recent form has been very good, and he's managed to drag the fight into that sort of grey area where it's not too much happening, but he's kind of controlling it there. So it's really a case of preparing for the worst situations you can be in, so you can revive the round if you're behind and you're in a bad spot. And also making sure that in between his moments that you're making the round your own, so that you're staying ahead and you can sort of steal those rounds.
Everyone knows a heavyweight fight can end at any moment. Everyone in the heavyweight division has the power to end the night quickly. How do you balance risk versus reward in a fight?
Well, I mean, everybody can hit hard. You get hit in the right spot, and all professional fighters in almost any weight class can hurt you. So I don't go into a fight with any fear as far as what someone can do. I just fear not being able to perform and not being able to do the things that I want to do. So, you know, I really look to have exciting fights. I get a buzz off of people's response to what I do, but I also have to weigh that up as well as trying to get the win as well, you know, and getting the right balance between the two. And you know, I'll certainly be looking to make this fight an exciting one.
What do you believe your key to victory is here?
You know, the key to victory is going to be just staying ahead in the fight, not You don't want someone like Cech being ahead. He's not going to engage much. He's going to just try and coast through the finishing line. You know, so staying ahead.
And final thing, and of course, this fight card is going to be headlined by Matt taking on Fedor. Since you've been in there with Matt Mitrione, what advice would you give Fedor in terms of battling a guy like Matt?
The obviously the work's done now, so I'd just say to believe in his hands and let things fly, because I found plenty of holes and spaces to land shots, and someone like Fedor Emelianenko is more than capable of replicating that and more so.
Ali, appreciate time and good luck here at Bellator 172.
Thank you.
And I appreciate Ali Thompson coming on the podcast this week to talk about his matchup coming up on Saturday night against Cech Congo. And, you know, obviously every heavyweight matchup is key in Bellator at this point, as, you know, we're going to see what happens there with the vacant heavyweight title. Now, coming up next, we're going to be joined by a man who we've seen inside the Bellator cage, but coming up next Saturday night, he's going to be fighting outside of the promotion, Josh Apel. He's going to be fighting a Gladiator Challenge. He's going to take on Ben Beebe. I had a chance to catch up with Josh and talk to him about his matchup next Saturday night at Gladiator Challenge. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that's going to be stepping back into competition next Saturday night at Gladiator Challenge as he takes on Ben Beebe. Josh Apel. Josh, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, last time we had a chance to talk to you was right before your fight against Bobby Lashley there at Bellator. It did not go your way. When a fight doesn't go your way, do you just immediately move past it, or do you go back and rewatch it and just basically assess your own performance and why things didn't go your way?
Yeah, I went back and watched it probably 100 times and see what I did different and what I should have done, didn't do. But, you know, you live and you learn, and you go on to the next one and get ready for battle.
Is it one of those things that you can't watch once you kind of get to a point so many times that you just can't go back and keep watching it because maybe you just get frustrated with what happened on that night?
Yeah, you know, I've watched it, and I'm like, you know, I tagged him with a couple of good leg kicks and then a straight left, and I tried taking him down. I don't know why I tried doing that. Maybe because in training camp I just did wrestle. And stand up, not a whole bunch of stand up, but it was just wrestling, defense, and takedown. So maybe in the later rounds when he got tired, but I just went for it too early, and I should have kept the distance, kept chopping the legs, and kept working them over.
It's been a couple months since that fight. So what's fight preparations been like for this matchup?
Spent a lot more time down at Alpha Male with all the guys. They brought us some heavyweights, a couple from Alaska and all over, and we've just been going at it. Working on my ground game, my stand up, my jits, my hands, everything.
I actually saw in your Instagram feed you're out getting the run with your dog there. You know, how much of doing the work on the road of running as part of your training camp?
You know, I'm a huge. I'd rather get punched in the face 100 times than gas out. So I do a lot of road work, probably 3-4 miles a day. I'm up here working right now in Northern California because we're a mandatory evacuation, and I work for the public works. So we worked all night last night, me and a coworker, and then got home and went for a run.
So, I mean, with what's going on right now for you and your daytime job, how do you work in getting the training in and get ready for the fight?
On a normal day when we don't have this huge evacuation, I work from 7 to, I think, 3:30, and then from there I could train in the evenings from 4 to 8 and then go home and spend time with my family and do it all over.
And now Ben Beebe here at Gladiator Challenge. I was looking at Ben. He went, was fighting, then had a long layoff from 2007 to all the way to 2016. And, you know, but also when you look at his opponents, for the most part, not the greatest of records. Is it hard to evaluate his abilities because of the fact that he's been away for a while, and also B, his opponents didn't necessarily have the greatest records?
You know, I go in there, you know, we're heavyweights, so any punch can drop, you know, I go in there training for him like I train for Bobby Lashley, and I get my game plan together and we try to execute the game plan to the fullest. And I don't think he's ever fought nobody dynamic like me, you know, with that kind of record. So
do you kind of feel like all the pressure's on you in this fight because everyone expects you to win this fight?
nah, I'm just going out to put on a show, get a couple wins back under my belt, go back to, you know, whatever big organization will take me.
You know, I see you want to go out there and put on a show, but how do you balance that line of making sure that, yes, you're putting on a show, but you're also putting yourself in a great position to succeed?
You know, I just want to go out there and fight to my fullest, and I didn't feel like I did it that my last fight outing with Bobby, you know, I don't know what it was, but I just felt like I didn't leave it all out there, and this time, wherever it goes, I'm going to leave it all out there.
Do you think at all that's a mental thing?
It could be, yeah. I mean, it just because, you know, coming off a loss like that, and I had a huge opportunity to get an upset and, you know, my stock go up. But, you know, Bobby's a great athlete and a great competitor, and I had my hands full.
Is there something you could take from that fight of just the physical traits that Bobby brings that has made you a better fighter?
You know, he's super strong. He's got great grappling. His wrestling's very good. You know, I did take away that I should not smother my punches and keep my distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I took away from that.
Is that something that's ever happened before in any of your fights?
No, not usually. Usually I keep the I don't know. Maybe I was just I don't know. I fought on a big stage before, but I don't know what it was.
You know, and with Ben here, I mean, what do you see as your key to victory? Is it just going out there and being who you are, putting in the game plan and those things?
Yeah, you know, with Ben, it's going to be go to my game plan, you know, fully, a lot of movement, a lot of cardio, a lot of in and out angles. You know, he's probably going to try to take me down like everybody else does. He's his bigger dude, but I've been working on all that down at LFML with Justin Buckles and Danny Castillo and those guys. So,
does it bother you that people just think they can take you down?
No. I mean, the problem, you know, one of my problems is like, I'm good at taking people down, but I never do it. I got too far away with trying to just stand up and bang and knock people out instead of, I don't want to be known as the guy that just lays on people and, you know, punches them. You know, I want to finish. I want to be a finisher. And that's what everybody wants to see is heavyweights go out there and bang. But I got to be smarter about it. I got to, you know, take them down. You know, if it goes there, take them down. If I'm, you know, say if I'm not winning the stand-up, and then just implement my game plan.
Is it one of those things where you have to make sure you're mixing and matching both of, hey, you know, if I'm on the feet, you know, winning that battle, but also making sure those timely takedowns where they're not expecting me, is it kind of like something you have to find that mixture of?
Yeah, and that's what I've been doing a lot of is, you know, setting up the punches, you know, to takedowns or faking the takedowns to come up with some punches. So I've been working a lot on that.
Justin Buckholz, obviously a lot of fighters out of Alpha Male really raved about him since, you know, the head coach there. What's he meant to you? I mean, what are some things that he's done for you that just really sticks out?
You know, he's just helped me with my striking tremendously on my angles and my movement and, you know, changing, you know, like you watch any of the Alpha Male fighters from, you know, Cody to Chad to Lance Palmer. The way they use their angles and their in and out and their level changes, and that's, you know, he's been helping me with all that.
You mentioned about there's some new heavyweights in Alpha Male. I remember last time we talked about you being there, it's kind of like, hey, it's a team that's primarily known of guys 155 and under, but who are some of those guys that have come in and helped you out?
There's actually a guy, his name's Patrick Lumba, and he's fighting this weekend on UFC Fight Pass, and he's the Alaskan heavyweight champ. I think he's like 9-1. And, you know, I got to work with him last week. And then my buddy, it's also heavyweight fighting on the card, is a local guy. His name's Thomas Fallon. And he's fighting on the card also. And then I got a new Muay Thai coach. His name's Donald Robinson, DJ Roberson. And he's been helping me a lot with the angles, the knees, the elbows, and that kind of stuff.
Do you at all feel like it's a version 2.0 of you that you're basically molding at this point?
You know, I think me going to Alpha Male is a huge, it was a turning point in my career. And with the last fight, I only spent a month and a half there, maybe 2 months. And now I have a lot more time there. I've learned a lot more. I'm going to the sparrings and the Friday classes. And I think I'm developing more tools as a fighter.
Do you train with the smaller guys?
No. Every now and then I go with like a 185 or something, but it's just more like putting in a high pace and working, pushing the cardio. You know, they don't cut me no slack. I got to stick along with the little guys, big guys, and we push. We push hard.
You know, some of those people, some fighters might say, hey, man, you hate the cardio aspect of training. Is that kind of one of the things you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I enjoy the cardio. I enjoy, like, looking at, you know, those guys and be like, I'm going to keep up with them the whole practice. So, yeah.
And as we're talking here, we're, you know, a week and a half out from your fight now. What's the next week and a half like?
You know, this week it's, I'll probably get one more hard sparring session in, and then it's going to be all cardio and mitts and working on timing and defenses and takedowns and just all of it, et cetera.
How often do you spar?
I usually spar once a week, real hard spar once a week, you know. Any more than that, you know, I don't know if it's doing any good on the body.
Is it one of those things as you've gotten older in the sport, you've kind of realized that you don't need to do those two or three times a week of hard sparring?
Yeah, I've realized that, you know, before when I was younger, I would, 4 days a week, beating the hell out of each other. It's just like, what am I doing this for? And now that I realize, you know, we still do contact down there, but it's, you know, on sparring days, it's sparring. But on, like, Fridays, it's you still do contact, but it's like a 50% contact. So you're getting your timing in, you're getting your angles, you know, your distance, you're getting everything in.
When it comes for you, life outside of out of training and fighting, what are some of the hobbies?
You know, hunting, fishing. I coach my son's baseball team. I coach his football team. So I'm head coach of his football team and baseball team. So I'm wrapped up with him if I'm not training or we're out fishing or just family time.
When you're coaching your son's team, how many of you know, the kids on the team kind of look at you and say, "Oh man, that, you know, it maybe question you about your fighting style and whatnot."
None of them do, because my son's only 7, and I try not to, like, you know, when I'm coaching, I'm a football coach or I'm a baseball coach. It's, you know, I don't talk about fighting or anything that around them.
And as I recall, you played semi-pro football, correct?
Yeah, for the Sacramento Prairie and the Twin City Cougars.
How much do you miss that aspect of it in competition, or is it one of those things you've kind of moved on?
No, man. If I go back and play football, I'd play football. You know, if I can go, but you know, like playing semi-pro, there's you know, when I was playing, there's no medical or nothing, and you just go play football.
Mm-hmm. What's the most you miss about football?
Man, like I tell everybody, football is my first true love. So everything, the hitting, the third and one, the fourth and one, you're down by 7. Because I play fullback and middle linebacker, so I miss all of it.
Fullback is a position that pretty much is essentially kind of leaving the game of football in reality.
It's pretty much gone.
I mean, I've got some buddies who coach high school football, and they're like, yeah, we don't even have a fullback on the roster.
Yeah, it's pretty much gone.
Is that, I mean, as for a guy who played fullback, is it just like, man, we need this? Or is it one of those things that, hey, the game's evolving?
No, the game's evolving. It's actually turning into, you know, more of the run pass. It's more pass-heavy game now. You know, you're getting these athletic quarterbacks that can sneak the ball and run and do all kinds of different stuff. And then the halfbacks, and you got big linemen. So, you know, I miss seeing the fullback lead up the hole and crack the middle linebacker and then the running back bounce off that, but, you know, it is what it is.
Do you see yourself, you know, coaching your son for, you know, all the way through his playing days, or?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. He loves it. He's a little animal, and he's quarterback and middle linebacker, so he's a little stud.
And, of course, your fight is coming up next Saturday, Gladiator Challenge against Ben Beebe. Any prediction on how you get the victory?
You know, I'm just going to go out there and put my game plan in full effect and go out there and get my hand raised. You know, whether if he wants to go to the ground, it's a bad decision. If he wants to stand, it's a bad decision.
And fans will be able to catch this Gladiator Challenge. Josh, as always, I appreciate the time and good luck next week.
I appreciate you having me, and thanks, man.
And I appreciate Josh Apel coming on the podcast, talk about his fight coming up next Saturday night, Gladiator Challenge, as he takes on Ben Beebe. Been interviewing Josh for years. I remember the first time I actually interviewed Josh was actually had a listener of mine said, hey, I really would love to hear Josh Apel on the podcast. That was a couple of years ago. And Josh always comes on the podcast. I appreciate him taking some time out as he's going to fight next Saturday night at Gladiator Challenge. Now, coming up next, you're going to hear from Leon Davis. We've had Leon on the podcast before, has fought in CES MMA, but now he's going to be fighting here in Ammo Fight League next Saturday night. He's moving up to 170 pounds as he's going to take on Ralph Johnson. So I had a chance to catch up with Leon and talk to him about his matchup next week at Ammo Fight League against Ralph Johnson. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be stepping into the cage, Ammo Fight League, coming up on February 25th. Leon Davis, we've had it on the program before. Leon, as always, appreciate time. Now taking on Ralph Johnson, going up to 170 for this fight. First fight at 170 pounds. Obviously, it's been some time since we've seen you. You're supposed to fight back in July of last year. That doesn't happen. But now you've got this matchup here. You know, first off, talk to me a little bit about the decision to take a fight at 170.
It was an easy decision. You know, my manager just asked, you know, if I wanted to fight. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll fight at 55, you know, and then we talked about it a little bit, and I was like, look, I'm coaching wrestling, because I'm a high school wrestling coach, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, really, you know, train a lot to make 155, so I was like, I'll take a fight at 170 or 65. We found a few guys at 65, they took the fight, and then they fell through, and finally, you know, Ralph said yes, he'd fight me at 170, so I was like, okay.
And Ralph's is a tall, lanky guy. He's a striker. Everyone knows that about Ralph.
Like six, he's like 6'7", man. I went from fighting a kid that was 5'8", to a dude that's 6'8". That's crazy.
How do you prepare for that?
You know, I got friends that are, you know, almost as tall as them. I train with Chuck O'Neill. We're going to be training with John Manley, so they're tall guys. So, you know, I'll be prepared for him.
What you know, when taking on a guy who's got that type of size on him in terms of height, what do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of that?
I'm used to being a taller fighter, you know, definitely. You know, so that's, it's going to be a little, you know, getting used to being the shorter guy. Being up at 170, I feel definitely a lot stronger and a lot faster. You know, I feel like I'm keeping my explosiveness and my, you know, just pure raw athleticness, you know, so we'll see.
Is there all a thought that, you know, maybe it, depending on how this goes, how you feel on fight night, that, you know, potentially you make the move full time to 170?
No, definitely not. You know, I'm going to just jump back and forth and just have fun and, you know, do 55 and 70. You know, definitely I think the best place for me in the UFC is 155. So that's, you know, that's where I'll be fighting at. But, you know, for the local shows and, you know, I can compete with these guys at 170.
10 months between fights. How would you describe the last 10 months?
It was a nice little vacation. It sucked, but it was, you know, it was definitely vacation. I got, you know, caught up on my video game playing and, you know, I was still training the entire time, but, you know, it definitely sucked. I'm not going to lie. Like, it kind of pissed me off too. You know, we kept on trying to get me booked and, you know, just fights kept on falling through, you know, especially the one in July. That one really pissed me off real bad, you know, with the fight getting called at weigh-ins.
Who had to tell you on weigh-in day that you're not fighting?
Oh, Tyson called me. You know, I was pretty pissed, you know.
Did you all think, like, Tyson was screwing with you?
Well, at first I was like, nah, you know, come on, man, serious. And then he texted me first. And then I was like, nah, okay, dude, whatever. And then he called me. And it took, like, 5 minutes for it to sink in. I just sat down. And I was like... Because I was traveling, you know, I was not only training at, you know, Fighting Arts Academy, I was also training the, you know, at Triforce MMA in Providence and going to Boston, Signeotong. So it was like, kind of like, kind of sucked. You know, I was like, I did all this hard work for nothing.
I mean, do you, obviously it sucks to be on the sidelines for, you know, 10 months. Do you just try to maybe just look at the positives of, you know, the way you evolved as a fighter over the last 10 months as opposed to looking at negatives?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm completely different now. You know, I improved on so many different levels. It's not even funny. You know, I worked on my jiu-jitsu, worked on my striking. You know, I competed, you know, in jiu-jitsu tournaments nonstop. So, you know, I definitely grew as a fighter.
And, you know, taking this fight with Ralph, you mentioned about the length that he's going to bring here. I think for a lot of people who have seen you fight, seen him fight, you know, how much of the thought process this is going to be, hey, I'm getting him to the ground. I'm trying to submit him.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Dude, that's when I told Chuck that I was fighting Ralph. The first thing he said was like, take him down to the ground, dude. He dropped me, you know, take him down to the ground. I was like, okay, you know, so, you know, we're going to work on, you know, striking into my takedowns and everything. So we'll be good.
You've won back-to-back fights here, looking for your third win in a row. You know, with the victory here, where do you think that kind of puts you of where you're trying to get to?
No, it's just another, you know, step in the right direction. You know, I'm focused on one fight at a time. I don't really try to, you know, look ahead too much. Really, right now, the person that's in my way is Ralph Johnson. That's my number one priority next Friday night. You know, and make things, you know, better. I get to fight in my hometown. I've never fought in my hometown.
You know, some guys love that. Some guys, you know, they kind of look at the burden of fighting in your hometown with, you know, people hitting you up a day or two before the fight, looking for tickets.
Nonstop. It sucks, man. It's. I'm not going to lie. I don't like fighting in my hometown. I'm not going to lie. It's like everyone's like hitting me up and they're like, oh, we can't wait to watch. You know, we got our tickets. You know, like it's like everyone's coming out of a woodwork and it's like, it's just. It's a double-edged sword, you know. It's definitely a double-edged sword, you know. But you know, I'm just going to try to have fun and enjoy the ride, you know. Enjoy the ride of next Friday night of getting in there and finally getting to compete again.
I mean,
you know, it's been a long time coming, man.
In fighting in your hometown, what do you expect your emotions will be like on fight night when you step into competition? I mean, do you kind of feel like that energy from the crowd is just going to kind of fuel you?
I don't know. I've never fought in my hometown, so we'll find out. You know, we'll find out. It's going to either fuel me or it's going to freaking make me shit my pants. You know, hopefully it fuels me. I've never fought at home. You know, I fought at home like 6-7 years ago, like as an amateur, but I've never fought at home as a pro. So it's like I feel like, you know, not only am I excited. But it's like I'm just trying to like keep calm and keep level-headed, and you know just stay focused. You know, like I told you before, it's all about just staying focused with me.
Do you at all feel pressure in fights?
Not really. My last fight, I didn't feel pressure. I was just aggravated, just that there's a lot of stuff going on, and I was just aggravated my last fight. So that's why, you know, I didn't really perform that good. But you know. Like this fight, I'm just like I'm not even don't feel pressure. I'm just pissed off. I've been on the sidelines for a whole year. So I finally like feel like I get to take out some of this like emotion out on, you know, someone, you know, like just like get this weight off my chest. Cause that's what it's like been like for the past year. It's just been like a weight on my chest, you know, just sucked. So, you know, I'm excited to like just finally get in there and, you know, just get some of this freaking anger out of me for fucking having to sit on the sidelines for a year.
You know, they talk about fighting with emotion. It can be good or bad. Are you at all concerned that the negative sides of it?
No, because when I wrestled, I was just always pissed off anyway. So I was like, and I was, you know, I have so many credentials as a wrestler that, you know, I think, you know, I I'm fucking emotional. I get out there and just go do it. And I never quit. And I just, you know, the more the fight gets harder, the more I get more pissed off, the more I do better, you know? So, you know, we'll see.
You mentioned about playing on the video games, getting caught up there. Was there a go-to game?
Oh, hell yeah. Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Is that still the go-to game right now, or you moved on to something else?
No, I moved on the Injustice.
Okay.
Two. So I'm tearing that up right now, you know. I'm always getting yelled at because I'm always on the video games. Whenever I'm not training, I'm on the video games. People call me up. I'm like, hey, I can't talk right now. I'm on this level, man.
But so. Is it, you know, the guys always talk about you have to have something that gets your mind off the fight game. For you, is that kind of just the outlet?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely an outlet. Because right now I'm working a full-time job. I'm coaching full-time. And I'm training for a fight full-time. So my days are from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night. So, you know, and by the time I get home, like, I'm, like, so wound it up, like, so tight that I just need something to relax.
And, of course, you've got this fight here to let all that aggression out here at Ammo Fight League.
I cannot wait, you know what I mean? I can't wait. Like, I'm so excited. I mean, so excited.
We're talking, this is, you know, it's next weekend. So what is next week and a half like for you?
It's not cutting weight. I'm walking around at 174. I'm not cutting. I trained at Signotong last Saturday. I weighed myself. I was like 172.5, and I was like, oh man, I'm going home. I'm gonna eat. So I went home. I had pizza, you know, and just a bunch of food. I stepped back on the scale. I'm 176. I'm like, what the heck? I can't gain any weight, man. It's like, it's crazy, you know. But I don't look like I'm like 172, you know what I mean? Because I'm still doing the strength and conditioning. I'm still training, you know. It's just I can't sit around and just do nothing, you know. I'm always active. You know, I go from one practice to another practice, you know, working, you know, full time. I can't, you know, I'm teaching right now, so I can't really like, you know, just go and grab something to eat. You know, I have a classroom full of kids. So it's like, you know, and I'm running after them doing stuff. So I'm always like, I always have some kind of conditioning going.
What do you teach?
Right now I'm paraprofessional.
Okay. How'd you get involved in that?
So my old high school wrestling coach, Jeff Peterson, he became the principal at Dean Technical High School. And they just called me and were like, hey, we're looking for paras. You interested? I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. You know, so I got in on it. I've been working there the past 6 months. I love it. You know, it's great. You know, me and the kids connect. They love that. You know, not only do they love that I'm the wrestling coach, you know, they love that I'm doing this. And it's like they're, you know, the kids also like that. I'm just a cool teacher. You know what I mean? I'm not there to, you know, it's like, okay, guys, just do your work. You know what I mean? Do your work, then we can have some fun. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not like, oh, you need to do your work and sit down still. And sit there, you know, nonstop. You know, I'm not like that, man. I'm good with that.
And of course,
they're all good kids. You know, they're mm-hmm. it's a level five school, so you know it's the worst of the worst. But they're all good kids. They just need you know output. You know, I think that's why our wrestling team's so good because it's just all inner city kids.
How long did it take them to find out that you were an MMA fighter?
Oh my God, it was like so. I walked in and. It was probably a third day, and then they're looking at me. They're like, Mister, we saw you on Access TV. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oh, shit. So, you know, it was good.
Have you ever gotten a parent that comes up and says, so you're an MMA fighter?
All my wrestling parents, they actually come to my fights and everything. It's actually funny.
But, of course, you got the fight here next Saturday night against Ralph Johnson. Leon, as always, man, I appreciate time and good luck in the fight.
Hey, thank you very much.
Great stuff there from Leon Davis. I appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his fight coming up next Saturday night, Ammo Fight League, as he's going to take on Ralph Johnson. Now, our final guest on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast going to be returning to competition next Friday night, Front Street Fights 11. It is Cesar Scavalos. I had a chance to catch up with Cesar and talk to him about his matchup next Friday night against Casey Johnson. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, this man's going to be stepping back inside competition. Front Street Fights 11 come up on Friday night, February 24th in Boise, Idaho. It is Cesar Scavalos taking on Casey Johnson. Cesar, I appreciate the time. The last time we saw you was back at at that, the RFA fight against Chico Camus. It's been a little bit since we have seen you in action. So what's been going on since that fight?
You know, just been actually doing a lot of weight training since then. I feel like I'm a little bit small for the division, so trying to just put on a little bit more strength. Not necessarily size, but just make up a little bit of the strength. I've been training lifting weights probably 5 days a week, and then all my normal other training as well. So, you know, just work, basically work, training, and kids. That's my life. So,
in terms of getting stronger, was that the takeaway from the fight against Chico, or was it even before that fight that you started to kind of realize that maybe you need to pay a little more attention to getting stronger?
Yeah, even a little bit before. You know, I always kind of just used my stamina to get by, you know, just try to tire the guy out and wear him out. But, you know, when it comes to the wrestling end of the deal, if you get tied up and, you know, you lose a few minutes here and around, you lose a few minutes there and around, that'll cost you the fight. And, you know, I just can't have that happen anymore. I just felt like really that was another aspect of my game that was a little bit lacking. So I just wanted to work on it.
Any other tweaks you made in preparations for this fight, you know, coming out of the last fight?
Yeah, probably not as much real hard sparring. You know, a lot of times we just tend to get out there and just beat each other down all the way up to the fight. And I think it kind of works against you a little bit. I mean, it's good to get in a lot of hard sparring, but sometimes you beat yourself up before you even get into the fight. And then you go in, you know, with little tiny aches and pains here and there. And I just wanted to come into this feeling fresh and complete. I wanted to feel like before you start a training camp, you know, you feel good, you feel ready to go. And then you kind of beat yourself down and then try to get back up towards the end, towards the fight. And I wanted to start out fresh. So that's really what was my main focus.
I think the term that I seem to hear a lot from fighters is, you know, when they're talking about not, you know, the hard sparring, it's more technical sparring. You're still sparring, but you're not going full board. Is that the way you would kind of describe the mindset for you? Is when you are sparring, it's more of a technical style than opposed to a, you know, full on sparring session?
Yeah. It's more, like you said, more of a technical sparring session. Usually it's almost like your sparring sessions are just like your fights. You know, you're going hard, you're hitting each other, you're going for submissions, you're going for everything full bore. This is, you know, we dial it back, you know, 60%. You're still hitting each other, you're still getting punched, you're still taking a little bit of abuse, but it's slowed down just enough where you can make small adjustments during the training that you can actually implement later on. You can kind of hone it in, you know what I mean?
And, you know, I know you said after that fight at RFA is, you know, you try to take the positive out of it, the fact of you're on a national platform, more people got to see you fight, but now you're back in Idaho. How much is it easier for you fight week to be fighting in Idaho as opposed to going out of state?
Yeah, it's definitely easier because, you know, I can make my weight at home and then just drive up to Boise and weigh in. So it's a lot nicer. I got a sauna at my house. So, you know, I have all the comforts of home all the way up, you know, till 36 hours before the fight. So that's really nice. And, you know, even when I'm in Boise, I lived there for 7 years. So I know a lot of people. I can, you know, there's a lot of places I'm real familiar with. So it's just, you know, it's a lot, you're a lot more relaxed, and that helps a lot to conserve your energy for when you need it and the fight time.
You know, for people outside of Idaho, I think it's been over the last year or so that we've kind of gotten familiar with the Idaho scene and some of the local fighters up there. You know, kind of explain what the Idaho scene, MMA scene is like. I mean, it's, you know, RFA has gone up there. Bellator has not now gone to the state of Idaho. What has the scene been like now, the fact of more of these national promotions are putting their attention to that state?
You see a lot more amateurs getting interested in the sport, a lot more guys that, you know, people have an idea in their head of what fighting is going to be like, and then they come and train and they realize, oh, man, this is a lot of work, and it's tough. You know, they realize how hard it is. So you get a lot of guys that'll come in for 1 or 2 days and then you never see them again. But some people that stick with it, you know, they end up doing something good for themselves. It's pretty tight-knit community in Idaho. I mean, everybody seems to know everybody, you know, the camps and everything, and everybody's pretty cool with everybody else. You got a few stragglers here and there that don't agree with each other, and, you know, they have their little, I guess, feuds. But for the most part, everybody gets along and everybody's willing to help each other in the bigger scheme of things. Everyone wants to see everyone succeed over here.
You always hear fighters talk about how, you know, this is a tough life. You know, this is, you have to be mentally strong to be a fighter and have that motivation. For you, is it just simply for your children and providing them with a better life? Is that your biggest motivation?
No, you know, fighting as far as providing for my family, it doesn't, you know, it's not a moneymaker for me. I do it because I love to fight. And I, you know, it's in my blood. You know, my dad was a fighter. Anyway, yeah, you know, I do it because I love to do it, and I want to be successful. I want to be at the top, you know, at the top level, just like anybody else. The reason you get into fighting is because you want to become the champ eventually. And if you don't, if you're not in it for that reason, well, you need to do something else.
And, of course, this is the main event of Front Street Fights 11 on Friday, February 24th in Boise, Idaho. You're taking on Casey Johnson. You know, first off, give me your assessment of Casey and what type of challenges he's going to offer you.
You know, I don't know a lot about Casey. I know that he had some amateur fights a long time ago, I think maybe 2005, 2006. I think he's been training a long time. You know, he'll be a good opponent for me, but you know, I think I'm definitely a better fighter in all aspects. He's not going to go down easy. He challenged me to the fight, which I accept right away. But I think that, you know, I fought high caliber opponents throughout my whole career, and I don't think he's going to be any different, but I'm going to definitely come out on top.
Yeah, do you see the victory coming a certain way?
You know, I'm always going to be going for submissions. I always try to finish the guys in any way I can. But my strongest point is my submissions. You know, it can end any way. A fight is, fights, as much as you want it to be controlled and technical, fights, you know, fights are wild. You never know what's going to happen. It's just, you just got to, like the ref says, protect yourself at all times and go out there and do your best. You can't really, guys are always wanting to say, oh, I'm going to go out there and knock him out, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. You don't know what's going to happen. It just, whatever happens in the moment is what happens, and it's going to play out however, you know, whoever's trained the best, I believe.
You mentioned about you're always a guy that's going to be looking for the submission. Have you ever found yourself inside a fight where you felt like you were fishing for something that just wasn't there?
Yeah, but, you know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu a long time. Probably, let's see, I don't know, 12, 13 years. So, you know, with that much rolling time, you know when you're not going to get something. And it's like, I'm not going to burn myself up on this. I'm going to move on to the next thing. It's really about tricking the guy into something else. You want to bait him into something else, thinking, oh, I really want this. So he'll give up the next move. It's just, you know, it's a chess match. It's just, set this guy up. He's going to go for the bait, and then I'm going to get the finish. So it's just from one step to the next. If one doesn't work, you just move on. You just keep moving. You keep the guy confused. That's the best way I can put it.
And, of course, this fight come up here Friday night, February 24th, the main event of Front Street Fights 11. Cesar, I really appreciate time. Anywhere where my listeners can follow you out on social media?
Yeah, I got Twitter at CesarSclavos, or not .com, but just at CesarSclavos, and, you know, my Facebook page. I'm not real huge on social media. I honestly just don't have a lot of time for it. You know, with training, work, and kids, I got a lot on my plate. So don't have a lot of time to stare at my phone.
That is totally understandable. Caesar, appreciate time and good luck here next week.
Okay, thank you.
And that was my conversation with Caesar Skolavos. I appreciate him taking some time out to talk to me about his fight taking place next Friday night at Front Street Fights 11 in Idaho as he takes on Casey Johnson. Also want to thank Liam McGarry, Ollie Thompson, Josh Apel, and Leon Davis all coming on this edition of the MMA Report podcast. The final thing I wanted to mention before we get out of here is actually a matchup that is now official for UFC 209. And, you know, when this matchup got announced, a little bit of a head scratcher, but, you know, maybe it does make sense in some way. And that is Rashad Evans versus Daniel Kelly at middleweight is now set for UFC 209. And the reason that this fight was not officially announced by the UFC for a while now is they had to wait to make sure that Rashad Evans would get licensed in the state of Nevada. That did happen. Of course, Rashad had the issue there in New York State when he was supposed to fight at UFC 205. So now he is going to take on Daniel Kelly, UFC 209. But of course, coming up this weekend, you have Bellator 172 on Saturday and then UFC Fight Night Brown versus Lewis on Sunday. First up, when it comes to that Saturday card with Bellator 172, just kind of briefly go over it as we wrap up this edition of the podcast. Or Matt Mitrione, Fedor Emelianenko will be your main event of the fight card. Patricky Pitbull, Josh Thompson also on this fight card. Of course, you heard from Ollie Thompson taking on Chuck Congo. The other two fights are going to be part of this main card, Brooke Mayo and Veda Ortega, and Josh Koscheck versus Mauricio Alonso. If I could say that right, Mauricio Alonso. So finally going to see the Bellator debut of Josh Koscheck. So interested to see what happens there. Of course, we'll have a preview podcast. We'll talk about Bellator coming up on Friday when that preview podcast does come out. Then, of course, on Sunday, it is UFC Fight Night Brown versus Lewis, and or Lewis versus Brown. Of course, six-fight main card on Sunday, main card 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. there on the West Coast from Canada. Of course, co-main event, Johnny Hendricks and Hector Lombard. The Paul Felder and Ricci fight is a matchup that I definitely have my eyes on there. Interested in that one. Also, really interested in the early prelim fight between Gerald Mershart and Ryan James at 185 pounds. Looking forward to seeing that matchup. But, of course, myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast coming out later on this week. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, go ahead and do that right now. Right on iTunes and Stitcher, just search the MMA Report, as you can check out all the podcasts that, you know, every Wednesday a new MMA Report podcast come out. And then, of course, we also have preview podcasts and post-fight podcasts, so you definitely want to check all of those shows out. So that is going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. We'll be back next week. We'll have more interviews for you, more talk about what is going on in this crazy sport we love known as mixed martial arts.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I've talked use of force continuum, and I talked the steps that officers must follow up to deadly force. And I've also talked about how you don't have to go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. You can escalate the deadly force when that threat is there, and the threat was there. But most importantly, officers' use of force is based on the suspect's non-compliance. That's all it's based on. So if you don't comply to my verbal commands, I can do soft, empty hand control. If you don't comply to this, then I can do this. If you pull out a gun or a gun falls on the ground and then you pick it up and you refuse to drop it and you've just scuffled with me, you just assaulted me on my first contact, I think I can go to a court of law and articulate that the imminent threat of death or bodily injury was there based on your actions.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.